Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for June 6, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
Just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Today, June 6th, is the anniversary of D-Day. June 6th, 1944 was that invasion of Normandy.
And if you remember watching maybe Saving Private Ryan, which is probably the most vivid portrayal of that invasion that I'm aware of. That was just, I mean, such a touching, touching event. There's a story I like to tell a little bit about it where I had, I moved to Chicago right around that time. And my buddy's brother just got back from Marine basic training there. So he's all puffed up and he's just ready. I mean, he's on his mission. He's a young
literally gung ho.
Okay, so he wants to go see it, and I want to go see it. So we go see it, and then all around us, it's just the sea of silver hair guys and their wives, and they were the young kids that were there,
right.
or many of them were there, or whatever campaign they were part of,
right?
And the tears that were rolling down their eyes, the number of people who had to stand up and walk out of the theater, because those first few minutes are so intense.
Brutal. That is the image of war.
Well, and you got to see the chaos that was going on around it, and you really got to see sort of what modern war, you know, modern war may have started back in the Civil War, but this was really a good portrayal of that as best we can. This is the sacrifice that they made to free Europe to basically push back Germany was incredible during this time. And this is D-Day today.
Yeah, it's a day to remember. We thank all of those soldiers who sacrificed so much, not just in this particular piece, but all throughout history.
Well, there's only so many of them left. I want to say there's less than 10,000 of these veterans left.
Time moves forward, that is for sure. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. It's summertime, and I'm watching movies, which is nice. I'm watching baseball movies.
You're watching baseball movies.
What's your number one? What's your baseball movie?
Well, I like the Bad News Bears.
I love the Bad News Bears.
I love the Field of Dreams.
I even like the remake of the Bad News Bears, which was not a great film, but it was still a lot of fun.
We had Walter Matthau drinking beer the whole time.
Handing beers out to the kids.
Oh, and they're cursing the whole time.
It's adorable.
That whole series. I would have to go with Bull Durham.
Yeah, Bull Durham is a great film.
Nuke.
Susan Sarandon.
Nuke. That's the name of the pitcher.
Yeah. How about Major League? Did you like Major League?
Yeah, it's all right.
It's silly. It's a silly comedy.
I love the cliches as Kevin Costner is interviewing Nuke for to prepare him for the big leagues.
Yeah.
I'm just glad to be here. I hope I can help the team. The guy goes, this is boring.
Yeah.
Of course it's boring. Run it down.
It's supposed to be boring. This is not what you're here for. You're here to play baseball.
Women are weary. They're not hairy.
I got a chance to see one of those classic baseball movies this week. I saw The Sandlot from 1993.
No, that's a very good movie.
That's a classic.
So why did you end up watching that one?
Okay, here's the long story. My 11-year-old has a shirt with a picture of the catcher from The Sandlot with the words, "You're killing me, Smalls," the classic line from Sandlot. He wears this shirt out and people walk up to him and go, "Oh, The Sandlot, don't you love that movie?" And my 11-year-old, up until this week, has always said, "I've never seen this movie. I don't know what you're talking about."
So you watched it with your son, this is the perfect age.
This is the time. This is baseball season. This is baseball age.
But it's the age that these boys are.
That's right.
You're dealing with a seventh or eighth grader. Mm-hmm. Right around that time, 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Yeah, the idea of summer. And what are you going to do for the summer? Are you going to sit in the house and play video games with your thumbs? Or are you going to get out there, find a sand lot, find a bunch of buddies, and hit the ball around for a while?
Oh, have fun.
That's where we're at right now, especially with the 11-year-old. Sandlot is a fun movie. Get out there. Go outside, kids.
Where did you watch Sandlot?
I actually bought a copy on Amazon for $10 because I knew that we would watch it again later.
Okay.
So it was an investment.
Yeah. He's using these quote lines. Investment.
Well,
okay.
I buy a lot of movies. Let's put it that way. You got a chance to see The Wizard of Lies. This one's on HBO. What's that one about?
This is about Bernie Madoff. So if you remember 2 weeks ago, I had listened to a podcast called
Tanzi Supernova.
That's right. And it went through the Bernie Madoff story. The gentleman had interviewed, he had 3 hours worth of interviews of Bernie Madoff while he's in prison in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And he built a basically a 3-hour podcast around it.
Okay.
So this is the dramatization of that.
With Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, boy.
And this was based off a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing on HBO right now. And so with my DirecTV and my phone service, I end up getting free HBO now, I guess.
And so you're utilizing it as much as you can, I think.
Yeah, I'm discovering it. And I'm discovering what I like about it, which I like the on-demand part of mm-hmm. it. What I don't like about it is, you know, basically going to the station and seeing the same movies over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, this is the latest one. This is worthy of your time, especially if you have interest in this story like I did. Now, Bernie Madoff, through the Ponzi scheme that was his investment company, had basically embezzled or stolen $65 billion.
That is crazy.
From his clients. Now, the mats were sold from this. There are people who committed suicide. His one child had the cancer return, which could have been the stress of it. Mm-hmm. The other one killed himself.
Yeah.
And Bernie was a fraudster. He was fraud from the beginning one. And this is that story. So we don't go back to the 60s when he first set up his place. We really are coming right around the time the FBI are coming in. They're going to arrest him. There is this scene where they come to his home to arrest him. He's got to take his shoelaces out. He's got to take his belt off and stuff like that. When you go to prison,
mm-hmm.
you are just you can't have anything, no ties or anything
right.
like that. I enjoyed this. This gives you some of the background of this. You get to see the type of wealth that was going on. You also get a feeling for the pressures he was under, because if somebody was going to withdraw money,
mm-hmm.
he had to have money coming in. And there's a nice scene where he's working with someone who wants to invest with Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, I have $100 million. And Bernie's like, well, I can't put you in front of my other clients. It's a closed fund, which right. basically means that they have all the investors they need, is when they use that term, closed fund. Anyway, it keeps going. Well, what about $200 million? Well, you know, I still can't do it. The guy ends up going, I think, up to $400 or $500 million.
Wow.
$400 or $500 million.
Because that's what Bernie needed to pay out somebody else.
Correct.
On the other side.
Correct.
Out the back door.
That's right. And as always, this is, you can't believe this happened,
mm-hmm.
but it did happen. They've got a great cast in this. I think they wrote it pretty well. I wonder if this is going to cloud my view of this. I want to read a book on this. And not this book. I really want to read much more of an academic look at this.
Okay.
Because this is just a fascinating story. How could this happen? And
maybe how we can prevent it from happening again, too.
Well, I think
be a little bit smarter in our investments.
I would be surprised if it could happen again,
mm-hmm.
but nothing surprises me.
The other thing that you got a chance to see on HBO is called Section 60, the Arlington National Cemetery. This is a really sad story here.
All right. So this is where if you were a military person who passed away, and you would serve most likely in Afghanistan or in Iraq or mm-hmm. something like that. So this is a relatively current. While this film came out in 2008, these are relatively current people who've passed away. We're going to Arlington Cemetery, and this is, if you've been to Washington, D.C., to Arlington mm-hmm. Cemetery, it's just line and lines of white marble grave sites for our, you know, basically it's supposed to be our most sacred land.
Right.
So anyway, this is a story of the people who go visit those, some of the pomp and circumstances that go through a funeral ceremony. And I mean, the whole time you're watching this, you can't help but well up multiple times through it. There's this portrayal of this gentleman who is the father. He's got his hand on the grave, and he comes out and takes naps on top of his son's grave.
Mm-hmm.
And just basically is sitting there, and it's his way of being with him. Another story is a brother who comes out. He's got a couple beers. He's snapping them, and he pours beer on the grave.
Yeah, for having a drink with his brother.
There's moms who are coming out with their children. The children have drawn pictures for dad or for mom. They want to spend time with him.
Right.
The one story was this: the father was sent over before she was born and passed away. I don't know if he ended up seeing his daughter.
So many stories.
Oh my goodness. And it just keeps going on and on and on. There's one of the ones at the end was there. It's right around Christmas time. And the daughters are placing candy canes with all the graves around them. What an interesting review. And, you know, Memorial Day is a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so just a beautiful review.
Honoring all those who have served, yeah.
You get also, just if you've ever been to a military funeral, and if you haven't, this is your opportunity to sort of see what goes in, where the horse comes out with the casket and the military service. Where they come, and you don't get a 21-gun salute in this, but you get a lot of the other parts to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I do recommend this. It's called Section 60 Arlington National Cemetery, and absolutely touching. And you know, if you ever get a chance to go to Arlington Cemetery and see the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, the Changing of the Guards, or even walk the field, I think that you will have a new type of appreciation of what it takes to be a soldier and what people do at times.
That is a very sacred ground, as you said. You get a feeling when you get there, that's for sure.
Are you familiar with how Arlington Cemetery was established?
No, how was it established?
It was established in the Civil War, and that was Robert E. Lee's family plot. It was his wife's land. And the reason it was taken away from them is because at the time that the war was going on, you had to come pay taxes for your land, which is right across from a bridge from Washington, D.C. And you have to show up in person. And so she was down in Richmond, and when she went up to, she sent somebody to pay the taxes up in D.C., they would not accept them because it wasn't the owner of the land, so the land was taken over.
Hmm.
So, and what did Lincoln do? He buried the Union dead on it, so no one can say Lincoln didn't hold a grudge at times. So as the Union soldiers came back, that was where he buried them. That became the Arlington
the
Cemetery.
The National Cemetery.
It is. It is. So there's always something fascinating to learn about how we set things up.
There you go. Opening this week, we've got some interesting movies. We've got The Mummy.
Tom Cruise, Steve.
Tom Cruise running from mummies.
Well, did you see, this is part of the, tell me about the Universal, they've got a universe that nobody really acknowledges and nobody really watches, but this seems like the first one that I think I would have interest in seeing.
Okay, let's back up a little bit. Some of us watch the classic Universal monster movies.
Well, we know
Frankenstein, Dracula, The Mummy, The Wolfman.
Correct.
Those classics that Universal still owns the rights to.
No, but they came out with a new series of.
So this is the next film in the new universe of those Universal monster movies.
This is the third.
Correct.
So we've had a Dracula one that came out maybe last year, and then we had a Frankenstein one,
correct,
that came out a couple years ago. Did you see either one of those?
No.
I didn't either. So obviously this is working real well for them, but they went with big time actor here.
This one is the one that has the most promise of the three so far, because they got Tom Cruise, because you love Tom Cruise when you finally get around to seeing his movies.
Well, that's my joke, is that I don't usually see Tom Cruise films in the theater, but when I see him, I go, oh, that was
a good movie. Tom Cruise is a good actor.
I probably seen him that earlier. He's going to be running somewhere at some point in this.
And he is the action star, and this is The Mummy. This is not the Brendan Fraser silly running from the mummy story.
All right, so Tom Cruise runs.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt eats something.
And gets angry.
And then we have Tom Hanks pees some point in his films. Those are the things you always have to look for in their films. So Tom Cruise will be running somewhere.
Yes.
And this looks scary.
It does look scary. I think this is going to be a genuinely frightening movie.
Well, anyway, this one looks actually really good. And this is kind of the big blockbuster for the week.
For the week, yep. We also have a movie called The Hero. This is Sam Elliott and his wonderful voice. He's playing an ailing movie star who's coming to terms with life.
After serving backup at the Double Deuce for a number of years.
The dude abides.
Well, I'm thinking more along the lines of Roadhouse.
I was thinking more about, the Big Lebowski. What a shock.
Well, anyway, Sam Elliott in his wonderful voice is going to play this this star,
yeah,
who's coming to terms with something,
yeah,
and this looks like it's going to be the, when I say intellectual or the adult film, no, the grown up film for the week. So if you had to go and you said I'm not going to watch The Mummy, maybe the wife says I've got to have a little bit more to that. Sam Elliott would be the one to go see.
Yeah, Sam Elliott's wonderful. There's another movie coming out called Miles. This is a kid from Middle America who wants desperately to move to Chicago, and in his desperation, he finds a plan.
Oh, he does. This looks like a Richard Linklater movie, but it's not.
Okay.
All right. And the premise of, all right, I'm gonna. It starts Molly Shannon, by the way. The premise of this is he joins a girls' volleyball team.
Because that's the opportunity he has.
They didn't have a boys' volleyball team.
Right.
And he's trying to get a scholarship to come to Chicago. And that's the reason why I picked this up, because, you know, everybody wants to come to Chicago, right?
No kidding. No doubt.
So what we end up having here is this really odd story. Now, when I was growing up, we, you know, on our soccer team, we didn't have a girls' soccer team in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually had a couple of young ladies who were on our team.
Nice.
I've never heard of a boy competing on a girls' team, but
seems reasonable.
But it's that's part of the story.
That's part of the story, isn't it?
Is like, is it fair? Anyway, mm-hmm. regardless. But this looks like a dramedy, and I don't know who it's aimed for. It's just truly an independent. If you have interest, look for it.
There you go. That one's called Miles. And it's out there. You can go see. There's so many movies. There's so many great movies, and some that we'd never hear about. Brings us to our book. At our book of the week, you have been continuing your study of D-Day. Today again is the anniversary of D-Day, and you read D-Day Through German Eyes: The Hidden Story of June 6, 1944.
All right. There's a couple things I want to mention. A few years ago, I spent a lot of time kind of studying or experiencing World War II through books and, mm-hmm. and visuals. So, you know, Band of Brothers, The Pacific, Saving Private Ryan would be the visuals of that. But I read some books and things of that nature. The other thing is to always go through your Amazon store and look for Kindle specials, because this was on special for $2.99. And I don't know about you, but $3 seems pretty reasonable to read something that you go, oh, that looks kind of interesting.
The value of that information.
All right, so this is the story, not of the British and the American and the Canadian, these groups coming through. This is on the German side,
mm-hmm.
of these soldiers waiting.
Waiting
and
at Normandy.
And they knew something was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
But they didn't know when it was going to happen. Everyone said how lucky they were to go to France and have to be, you know, set up in France, because your alternative was to be on the Russian front, where it's cold, cold, cold,
mm-hmm.
or, it's just muddy and mucky and warm. And anyway, you're fighting the Russians.
Right.
So everybody was like, oh, how lucky. This was a mixed troop, because when the Germans would end up taking over an area, if you swore allegiance to Germany, you could serve in the army, and this was, or the military, and this was a place that you would end up serving. So we got this. So this is about 10, 12 interviews with soldiers. Sometimes you get officers, sometimes you get the enlisted people and what they were expecting. A number of times they mentioned that this was very important because while they lost the war, you could get an idea of what they were thinking. The propaganda that Germany was using with these soldiers and in that area was, mm-hmm. this was a united Europe, and they were there to defend the united Europe. So
right.
This was very deep, and the author at the end, as he kind of wraps it up, he even mentions that. He goes, this is, you forget about how deep the propaganda to your own soldiers goes. You get some stories of when they were taken prisoner of war, so they ended up going to prisoner of war camps. We in our area, and in fact the entire Midwest, there were lots of POW camps in the United States, and usually these gentlemen would end up coming over. If they were not an immediate threat or something like that, they'd eventually be offered, you can go out and work on the farm or go work, you know, one of the local businesses. And then some of them don't leave. They liked it. But many of these people ended up going to Britain and going to POW camps. And one gentleman, in fact, there's got to be a book that's written about this, is that the Hitler youth that were prisoner of war there, they were still trying to rile things up. And they would create sort of a real strange dynamic in the prisoner of war camp, because if you didn't help them, then you were basically, they were inside, they were beating you up and taking advantage of you, even though it was a prisoner of war camp. They usually are saying the British were very, when you got captured, you got food, you got water, you were treated really well. If you tried to escape, they just shot you.
Right.
So, you know, it's very interesting, just sort of their experience. I mean, imagine, just more than once in this book, they were describing the machines that were coming, these boats that were coming, and basically they were just continued to come. They were overwhelmed by the amount of stuff that just kept, you know, these boats just kept coming, the people kept coming, and the Germans were still using horses at that time to move things around. Okay, the Sherman tanks were coming. They were dropping jeeps off. I mean,
it was all mechanical on the United States side.
The amount of fuel that was available to them that they could keep going, it really was. They were awestruck at those types of resources. And from the American point of view, that was exactly what the United States ended up providing. Is that we could build planes and we could build stuff. I mean, that's what GM and Ford and all these other companies were doing. They're just cranking this stuff out.
Now, right.
Not that the Britons were, the United Kingdom wasn't doing the same thing. They were doing the same thing. But
right.
But we really had the steel we needed. We had all the fuel we needed and stuff like that. There was a interesting story about a German soldier who, they were beaten out of their trench where they had these big guns and stuff. And he was with all people who were fairly new to the military, because eventually they, you know, if you were a breathing person, didn't matter what disability you had, you were part of their army. These kids were scared, of course, but he ended up going back, and he ended up running into ultimately with these SS people, and he was awestruck at how confident the SS group was, and they had. I don't know. They had something, some kind of tank or something that they had put, you know, leaves all over to camouflage, and they ended up taking out a Sherman tank. Well, that didn't last very long because there was plenty of them coming behind. But anyway,
they did destroy the Sherman tank.
They destroyed one.
Yeah,
and they were also awestruck because the tanks that were originally coming on had they had some amphibious quality to it, and the ability that they could come out, and they were just like, what's going on here? We weren't prepared for these.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I really enjoyed this so much. The interviews, like I said, they felt were real important for to have an idea of what happened.
Perspective.
From all points of view.
Yeah.
And I absolutely enjoyed this. So I encourage you to, one, if you have interest in this, this would be these people are dying off just like the other soldiers are dying off. Getting their stories and getting their perspective is pretty interesting. And the other part about it is, if you have interest in Kindle, but you don't want to spend a lot of money, look around. There's plenty of these books that you got to go, that's interesting.
There's some very good writing out there at a very low cost. D-Day Through German Eyes. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. Brings us to our appetite, our app of the week. And this week, boy, we get some of the smartest people on the planet on this show. This week we get to talk to Professor Jonathan Chestnut. He's at the Department of Performing and Fine Arts at Fayetteville State University, and he's a professor of computer graphics and animation. Good morning, Professor Chestnut.
How y'all doing?
Oh, we are doing just fine. It is great to have you on again. We had you on before, and here we need to talk about some society things here today.
So we need more information. We have come to learn.
Tell us all about World of Warcraft, Professor Chestnut.
Ooh, all right. Not a little topic, huh?
Yeah. just a little topic.
All right. Well, first off, World of Warcraft, there's two groups. You have the Alliance and you have the Horde. The Horde represent what would be considered the evil races, and the Alliance represents the more classic fantasy positive races, humans, elves, gnomes, those guys. The Horde represent orcs and everything else.
Okay, so this is a video game, first of all. This is not a bunch of people. This is not a bunch of orcs that we need to, you know, segregate and put a wall up somewhere, right?
No, we're not building any walls.
Okay.
But they have walls around some parts of it.
This is a video game. When this started, this is a long-running video game now, right?
Yeah. The first incarnations of it were actually strategic battle where you would build. It was like Sim City. You would build like the little cities, and you would make people like wizards and fighters and everything else. And you would do these modules where you would fight the orcs were settling and everything else. There was a game before World of Warcraft. There was actually a couple of them. There was Ultima Online, which was a much graphically less developed game.
Okay.
But it was with a bird's eye view where you were looking down at your character. Mm-hmm. Then it was followed by EverQuest, which was probably at its incarnation what really got World of Warcraft off of the ground. EverQuest was you could do bird's eye view with your character, but most of the time people did first person view, so you were looking through the eyes of your character or directly behind your character. And it's basically a virtual world of immense scale. I mean, it's World of Warcraft now has, I think, 5 different continents divided into like 10 zones each.
Wow.
And you have thousands of players playing simultaneously.
So this is online now. The World of Warcraft took all of that online, so you're playing all at the same time. This is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game.
Well, both Ultima and EverQuest were online games. But World of Warcraft was at its time the most graphically nice. It was the most developed game, and it really launched into when bandwidth really got available for more and more people.
Okay.
EverQuest and Ultima were a little early in the bandwidth range. Okay. Areas of really developed internet usage had good bandwidth. But now, the way our networks work and everybody has 4G or 5G or they're connected to the Google Fiber, whatever, you can play and your reaction time in these games is so much better. So you're able to play over a larger network and have more and more people.
And for our listeners, what is the difference between, say, playing online in this world and then versus playing a role-playing game like Pathfinder, which we talked about before, or the old Dungeons and Dragons?
There's real similarities.
Okay.
Except for the differences are because, I mean, they're both fantasy worlds. They both have magic. They both have characters. You have levels. The more you play, the more levels you attain. Those types of things. The more abilities your character gets, the more opportunities, that kind of stuff. The differences are Pathfinder tends to be more social in the real world, is okay. What we IRL in the real life. And so you get into a room with people and you do things. You can do modules and adventures, and you have a game master, and it allows you to kind of determine the fate and direction of your own character. Whereas games like World of Warcraft, you have, we call it led by the nose gaming. If you make a character and I make a character and we both make humans, no matter what, we're going to end up doing basically the same quest.
Okay.
Because, you know, you're talking so much data and, they try to lead people into certain paths. So, there's other games like Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights, which are similar, but they're not online.
Okay.
And no matter what, like in Neverwinter Nights, no matter what you make, if you make a good character, an evil character, you make an assassin, if you make a paladin, you end up somewhere along the lines, all the missions converge and become sort of one thing. So you don't really get to affect the storyline by your character's decisions.
Okay. Do you prefer one version of this or one format to another? Do you prefer World of Warcraft to something like a Pathfinder or the old Dungeons & Dragons?
As far as prefer, I prefer tabletop games. Okay. But the problem is always getting... We live in a world now where everybody has places to be and we have appointments and schedules, and getting 5 or 10 people in around the table for hours at a time. When I was a teenager, yeah, no big deal. I mean, we had nowhere else to be. But now when I want to play, my kids have homework, my friends have kids, and they have to be places. And so things like World of Warcraft still allow us to do things together. I belong to a group called the East Coast Raiders, and we're on the Lightbringer server. And I met all these people online. For the most part, I've known these people for over a decade of gaming, and I've never been in a room with them. But we put on our headphones, and we fight the dragon, and so they're my friends, but it's just sort of a different kind of environment. So, sure.
There's a way of being social, I guess. And not really knowing the people, but not really knowing them.
Yeah, and people that play these kinds of games, a lot of times, if you go to conventions or if you you go to these things, there's a lot of people that have a lot of social anxiety. They don't feel really included in society.
Okay.
And it's an opportunity for them to meet people that feel the way they do and realize that they're not that different. That they are able to build a social base among like-minded peers. And so that's what D&D did for us back in the day. You had to kind of carry your book around waiting for someone to go, hey, you play Dungeons & Dragons. And like, yeah, and then you would start a group. But World of Warcraft allows you to you hit the button, you log in, and there's thousands of other people that think like you do running around, and you coalesce into guilds, which are groups of anywhere from, I think guilds had a maximum of like 200 members at one point, but I think there's more now. But and that's a group that of people that you get to know. I mean, I've got friends, like I said, that I've never met, but I've known them for a decade. I would trust them with my kids.
How many years have you played World of Warcraft? It started, what, in 2004?
Blizzard launched the World of Warcraft in 2004, so yeah, it's been 13 years. Have you been online playing for 13 years?
I started playing in 2006.
Okay.
Okay.
Over a decade.
When my oldest son was born, my wife and I, she was still in college and I was just getting hired here. So we didn't have a lot of free time, free money. He was our first child, so of course we were terrified of babysitters and everything else.
Sure.
So it became a way for her and I to do things together. So we both had accounts. My wife has, I think, I said something earlier that I have 10, but actually she has 10 level 100 characters, and I have 9. She was always more than me. And they were all leveled through normal progression. Now they do this thing where you can buy like a level 90 character so that you can play the upper end stuff. And originally it was pay to play all the time. But the way it's set up now, anybody can download World of Warcraft and play the first 20 levels for free. And so it gives you a sense of playing. But games like that, though, you have to be a little mindful of the addiction factor.
Okay.
There's a sense of success that you get when and you feel like you're doing something, you're accomplishing something, and it's a virtual accomplishment. And that's why, like, the first 5 or 10 levels in the game happen really fast, and there's bright lights, and it's bing, you level, and there's all these colors and everything else. And you feel like you're doing something. And what happens is, I was like, my main character, one of the reasons why I stopped playing was we played so much, and I did the whole, I typed in the little thing that tells you how long you played this character, and I had literally 365 days of playing that character.
Wow.
So one year of my life was involved with that character, and I started thinking about it, and I was like, what does that do for me? What does it do for my kids? What does it do? And so I enjoy World of Warcraft, but it's one of those things that it's all about moderation.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Is the game difficult to play?
No, I mean, it's one of those, as soon as you log in, you make your first character. What it does is you appear in this environment, and there'll be someone standing right there. They'll give you a mission, and that mission will teach you the first basic things about your character. And then you'll do some stuff for that person. They'll send you on a couple of little quests that get you moving along. You gain a couple of levels, so you feel like you're doing something, you're accomplishing things. Mm-hmm. And then they'll send you to someone else, and they'll give you a couple quests. And as you move forward, it expands more and more exponentially, to where you at one level, you're basically, like at a level 100, I have my own garrison. I have all these people that work for me. They're basically little computer people that I can send on jobs. And they make money and they make stuff for me and things like that. But, you can start today and be level 10 by the end of, in a couple hours.
And so you said you played for a long period of time. Is level 100, does a game ever end at level 100?
Well, at a level right now, they just updated it. They came out with a new one. And it's a level, they kicked that up to 110 is the new maximum.
Okay.
And what happens is at the max level, you have what's called end player content, which means it's focusing on the highest level people. So when I was level 100 and I was playing and my wife was level 100 and the cap was level 100, we would go on guild raids with our other guild members. They were all level 100. And there would be 20 or 30 of us, and we would go fight these world threats. There was a giant crab, and there was a giant dragon. There was a couple of dragons, but they're called raids, and they can take hours. And we schedule them, and we'd be like, okay, my guild raided on Friday nights, and we would start at 7 o'clock, and we would go until the little quotes around until, and it was usually 2 or 3 in the morning when we would stop.
Wow.
And then we put a lot of hours in, but there's always something, and so long as people are playing, they're going to keep expanding it. And because years ago they talked about, oh well, they're going to end World of Warcraft and they're going to bring out something new. And that probably will happen at some point. Something will circumvent it. There's a new game called Black Desert, which just came out of South Korea.
Okay.
And graphically, it is amazing. It looks like you're watching an anime cartoon, but it's your characters. It's not nearly as choppy or bulky as American animation. But it's way complex, and there's some translation issues where they translated directly, so they say things and it doesn't really make sense because of the way that the sentence structure is and stuff. But there's always something.
Is Warcraft still as popular as it was? Is it waning? Is it still growing?
I think it's leveled off.
It's
waned. It like anything. Whenever there's a game, new content comes out, all the old players come back.
Okay.
My wife, she, like I said, she's teaching this year, public school, so she can't stay up late and play. But she keeps threatening me to, she's going to get back on because she wants to make up that gap. Knowing that there's 10 levels of stuff she hasn't done yet is driving her crazy.
So there is, when I say that you said it properly, an addictive part of this. It gives you pleasure to do this, but it also takes up time. So that ability to kind of
balance.
Oh, as with everything, the yin and the yang.
That's right. Did you see the Warcraft movie last summer?
I did. I saw the movie. I did make it through that. Yes,
make it through that. You sound a lot like review. Chip. Hey, I made it through that. I'm glad that I went through it. I made it through. Could
you? Yeah, it was one of those things that when they said they were doing it, I was like, oh, please, no. It's like years ago there were the Dungeons and Dragons movies, and the first one was okay, and then the four that followed it were just train wrecks. And World of Warcraft, the fact that they had the guy from Viking in it was like, oh. He was going to be so tough. And then it was, oh, no. So, I don't know. It was a little too Avatar for my taste, but.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, it does remind me a little bit of Avatar. You're right. That you are pretending to be these people. You are living this second life. That's a different game. But you are experiencing life from the eyes of somebody else. That's a great way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's escapism is what it is. It really boils down to that as far as no matter how bad your day is, if I had a bad day at school and my students gave me grief or whatever, I could go home and kill a bunch of orcs and feel good about it.
Great.
Death makes you feel good. The beauty of this, as you described it, was you were new parents. You had something you could do together.
Mm-hmm.
And as all new parents do, you find out you have large body of time available between feedings.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
It gave my wife something and I had to talk about. Because, we talk about the kids so much, but after a while she was like, we would watch TV, but eventually we wanted something where we were engaged in doing something, and that really filled our time. I mean, we ran around together and we did that for a decade.
Had adventures. That's fantastic.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you, Professor, for joining us and talking about this whole other world that I know very little about. Is there a way that our listeners can contact you and ask you questions about all this stuff and all the things that you're doing at Fayetteville State University?
Absolutely. My email here is jchestnut, C-H-E-S-T-N-U-T, at uncfsu.edu. And I welcome any questions, comments. If people are interested in it, I can point them in the direction of where to play and where to find stuff. Always happy to help.
And of course, there is the Fayetteville State University Geek Talk podcast that you can find out, or you can listen to them talk about this subject and more. In addition to that, we'll have everything in our notes so that you can easily click in to be able to learn more.
Very good. Thank you again, Professor Chestnut.
Anytime.
Brings us to our Now the News. It's summer. Drinking is a part of it, and Zima is going to be a part of your summer.
I know, and most people don't remember Zima, except for maybe they do. All right, so let me describe Zima. So I was finishing up college. Zima was part of the clear trend. I don't know if you remember Crystal Pepsi.
Yeah.
All right, and then for Richmond, Virginia, we actually had Miller Beer.
Mm-hmm.
Had clear beer,
okay,
which was they were one of the test markets for that. I think so. I actually have a bottle of that still left.
Really?
Yeah, and it really was clear. So the idea, I guess, was clear means better, right?
Clear is clean somehow. So you have to. Here you go. Here's a beer.
All right, but Zima was a malt liquor. That was a sweet malt liquor.
Okay.
The charge against it at the time was taking a higher alcohol beer or a beer with more alcohol, and then making it taste like a soft drink.
Which seems dangerous.
Well, let's just say that Zima never had the most masculine reputation out there. In fact, I remember going out and we'd order beers for everybody. And, of course, you would turn around and hand one guy the Zima because, you just had to.
Used to be a jerk.
You just had to do it. And, okay. And then the guy with the Zima, of course, would have to drink it as manly as he could. I mean, it's just kind of fun. And the other joke about it was to carry around a bag of Jolly Ranchers so you could drop one in there because it would be equally.
It would just add to the flavor.
It just make it as pretentious as possible.
Okay.
Anyway, Zima is one of those beers that will always have a fun reputation.
Okay.
And it is not being made anymore. They stopped making it 4 or 5 years ago.
But it's coming back.
Well, as a test. Now, Zima was made by Coors, and Miller owns Coors.
So okay.
Chicago. Miller's based here. They're going to bring back, my sister-in-law saw the ad in the store. In June, there's going to be a Zima. So
June.
So the deal is to go to your Zima. Local store.
Bring some Jolly Ranchers.
You have to buy a whole bag of Jolly Ranchers.
And your manliest friends.
That's right. And go ahead and get a case of Zima and have a party, because it is, like I said, the joy of this will be very quick. I'm sure this is a limited run. But still, it's a lot of fun to go back and revisit some of the weird things in the past.
Weird things of the 90s. I'll take weird things from the 90s for $1,000, Alex. Zima.
Go have yourself a Zima. And yeah, maybe
have Crystal Pepsi.
Well, they had Crystal Pepsi.
Yeah, a couple months ago.
Yeah. Anyway.
Listen to the Spice Girls. Watch Twin Peaks. Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Steve's youth is coming back.
The 90s is not my youth. That is not valid.
It's adult youth.
It's my adult youth when I was in college. All right, I'll take that. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week.
I think we can. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.TooMuchScrolling.com. Find all the news that you need. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Zima drinking Chip Hesley.
Here's some Jolly Ranchers. See you in the future.